Welcome to the Spirituality of Strength Training with your host, Anna Willard. This podcast is dedicated to bring you knowledge, wisdom, inspiration, and guidance to wherever you may be on your health journey. For those who are new to me, I am a kettlebell strength coach, a movement nerd ninja, and an empowerment coach on a mission to bring you hope through our health. The root word of health comes from wholeness. The root word of wholeness comes from holy. Despite our differences with religion and spiritual beliefs, we are all human beings with a body that is designed to reflect this holiness through our health. It wasn't until my seventh year as a health profession where I went into a deep awakening of understanding what does it mean to train my spirit and to heal my spirit through the physical. You'll hear a little bit more about my story from other health professionals, from strength coaches, psychiatrists, spiritual gurus and leaders, to other people who talk about the importance of our health as a community body and the health of our planet as well. This podcast is to allow us to step into our whole health, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Thank you for being here. If you love what you hear, I encourage you to subscribe. If you want more inspiration and quotes from these podcasts, I encourage you to follow me on Instagram at @Anna_Willard_. I encourage you to do a little bit of a movement, either a yoga flow, go for a walk, sit in nature, as you enjoy this episode. Hello, Stormers. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today's guests are some very dear friends and clients of mine, Ryan, I almost combined your names together.
That's for after the
yeah. Ryan and Shanvay, welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, super honored that you guys are here today. What was the biggest kind of like aha thing with training with kettlebells?
For me, so Ryan had been practicing for about 6 months before I started practicing. And we've talked about this a couple of times where I realized after starting a kettlebell practice how I wasn't connected with my body at all and how I spent so much time in my body, obviously, like every human does, but wasn't connected with it in any way. So for me, what was so different about kettlebell training was the intentionality that you taught me to put into every move and every position. Mm-hmm. And that calm, focused intent with every single move allowed me to be more present with my body. And for me, that allowed me to connect with that practice of working out in a different way than I had in any other sort of physical practice ever.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love it. I call that the Zen in.
Yeah, the Zen in. I absolutely out. For sure. I felt that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. What was different for me about kettlebells.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And Ryan, what about you?
See, I think for me, it was just allowing myself to slow down. Like, I always struggle with breath. For some strange reason, I don't know, and even in meditation, it manifests itself there too. So, yeah. Like, just slowing down and just realizing that I get better as, you know, I have more control of my body and the movements itself, kind of as I slow down and focus on the in and the out.
Yeah.
Piece, that was really something I think that was my big aha moment. Versus, like, in a CrossFit setting, you know, where you're just, it's a buzzer and a clock and you're trying to beat the clock and not necessarily focusing on yourself, but focusing on that. So it was more of an inward sort of type reflective moment, like swinging the kettlebells, working on my breath, in and out, taking
yeah.
time.
So. Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Now, have you guys, I know you kind of trained CrossFit before.
Yes.
Have you guys done anything like this similar? I know that yoga has a lot of like overlap to kettlebell training. Mm-hmm. Have you done anything like that before?
Not really. I mean, I've done sort of the traditional weights at a gym or machines, and a lot of like classes, but nothing that, nothing. I like that phrase that you use, like zen out, nothing that connected sort of the intentionality in the body with strength training or exercise. Mm-hmm. To me, it was always so much about getting to some sort of an end goal, of losing weight or a certain number of pounds or a certain number of inches. It was always really goal focused like that. Mm-hmm. So this was the first time that I've done something that felt like it connected me back with my body.
Cool. I know during the time that we were training together, you were taking a meditation course.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit of overlap, a little bit of the meditation and how you found the similarities with a certain exercise with the kettlebells?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started my meditation practice about 3.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when we started training together is when I had just started my teacher training course for mindfulness. And as I was getting deeper into my mindfulness practice, I think I noticed it most with the farmer's walks.
Yeah.
Every time I did the farmer's walks, it connected so closely to me with walking meditation. Uh-huh. And it helps me actually be more intentional in my walking meditation practice.
Oh, interesting.
Because when you're holding the two kettlebells in the farmer's walk, it forces you to slow down and also be so present with how your feet are falling and how you're protecting your knees as you're doing that farmer's walk. So for me, that's what made that sort of mind-body connection click mm-hmm. most quickly was when we, because I think we started doing farmer's walks as early as the second or third week mm-hmm. that we were training together. So that was the exercise that really helped connect mindfulness and that strength training practice for me. And then I was able to pull that to a lot of the other work and exercises we were doing.
Cool.
Yeah.
Ryan, do you have anything to add to that? I know we've done a lot of farmers walks with mm-hmm. your trainings and everything like that.
Yeah, I think for me it was more just going barefooted.
Yeah.
Actually being connected with the floor. Because after mm-hmm. my Achilles rupture, you lose a lot of proprioception. Mm-hmm. And so now I actually prefer to work out barefoot. I feel like I get more feedback. And so when you go, interesting story. I went to a gym in Davenport, Iowa, where I work at. And again, you can't work out here without shoes. I'm like, oh. So I had to put my shoes on. It was totally like a hot mess, like swinging kettlebells. Because it's, you know, you have this thick sole and you're all over the place.
Right.
So, you know, I really enjoy like that connectedness that you get through your feet. So that's something I really enjoy.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad I converted you to bare feet. Like a typical problem for us. Yeah. And for those who are listening and not watching, this is my first episode where I'm doing a live interview. So there's no camera between us.
Right.
We're just going for it.
That's right.
Jumping in.
And we're at Makers. We're going to do a quick shout out to Makers, which is a co-working space downtown in Seattle.
Yes.
And that's where Ryan and I were able to connect.
Yes.
Yes. Awesome. Now, with February being Black History Month, this series of episodes that I'm doing for February is all dedicated to people of color.
Okay.
So with that, what challenges have you guys faced with being of color, and how has strength training helped you kind of overcome some of those challenges?
Ooh, that's an interesting one. Let's see here. So I think it's interesting because, you know, normally when we look at race or whatever, you think, I just feel it's the human piece, like, you know, how you look at and interact with each other. But, you know, I think kettlebells, at least allows me, I use it as a way to channel my frustration or anger if I get in a situation.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just go downstairs and swing some kettlebells, or if I'm having a rough day, you know, something didn't go right.
Yeah.
That's how I use it as an outlet to actually channel my frustration through, versus like just blowing up on something.
Right.
So,
yeah. I can relate.
Yes.
<All right. laughs> It's a very healthy way to channel that anger.
Yes. Yeah, I will say I haven't had any issues yet here in Seattle. I mean, maybe there's some, probably you and I have some cops. But anyway, yeah. That's another story.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting piece of it, right? Like, as people of color, probably more so for you being Black, but a lot of times it's called code shifting. There's some code shifting that you have to do in more public and work environments in order to be able to interact in a way that's more comfortable for the mainstream audience, right? And so sometimes you can feel disconnected from who you are, and practices like mindfulness and kettlebells helps you reground in who you are and become more comfortable and confident that it's okay to be that all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And confidence in work, of course, helps with that as well. But all of those pieces coming together at the same time is really important. So being more comfortable in my body, mm-hmm. being more comfortable in my mind through mindfulness and kettlebells allows me to be more confident bringing my whole self to work and not having to play a specific character that might be expected of me. So I do feel like over the last maybe 3 years, I'm able to bring a more authentic version of myself to work and to people. Mm-hmm. And of course, kettlebells isn't the whole reason behind right. it, but it's a big player within it as I'm more comfortable in my skin.
One of my clients sent me little, I don't even know what you're going to call it, but it was like, stay true to you and the world will adjust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How have you seen with being more true to you and your history, maybe the work environment change around you or mm-hmm. just being more curious of your history and how to respect where you come from and how we can make this change within our nation?
That's good. You get a philosophical.
Oh, I know. That's why it's called spirituality and street chain. Yeah.
Yeah. Sean Gray said something that really just popped into my head as she was talking. I do think there's something when you're working out, you know I love chalk and I put on my, yeah. I get in my zone here onto my kettlebells. But I mean, I do feel like it increases, maybe it's the physicality of it too, but I think there's more, I guess, I don't want to phrase this here. I'm trying to think, it's like you feel better about yourself, you feel stronger, mm-hmm. right? I mean, mm-hmm. it's just that awareness, right? That you've done something physical here for an hour, swinging, goblet squats or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, you just feel better. Mm-hmm. You know about yourself at the end of the day. So that was something I think that just popped into mm-hmm. my head. Now, getting back to your question here, and you have to remind me, I've gotten off into a tangent.
Yeah, that's okay. That.
So remind me of the question again, and I'll see if
I can. So it's more about like being true to you and kind of what Chandra is saying about really the mindfulness work and the body work and congruent with each other of how she's able to like really own who she mm-hmm. is and be true to herself within her body, within mm-hmm. the work environment. Mm-hmm. So my question was based on, as you become more true to who you are, how have you seen people adjust to the fact that you are Black and the history that goes along with that?
Oh, these are really good questions here. I'm trying to, for me, because I work remotely, so
right,
you know.
Yeah.
But I think, I mean, my struggle throughout life when it comes to this, that I mean, I have always been the only Black person, mm-hmm. you know, whether it was in chemistry class or, you know, my major, even in engineering.
Right.
You know, or when I go to Japan for work, you know, I mean, it's just in the back of your head, you know, you think, like, I wonder what they think about me, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can't really allow yourself to get caught up in that. You know, you have to. Hey, I'm an individual, I'm intelligent, I'm here for a reason, you know, I know my stuff, you know, and it's just like, I try not to get caught up in that. And I mean, I just think, you know, when I swing or work out, you know, it sort of resets that, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm in the present moment, I feel strong, it's like a renewing of my mind and spirit. So I feel mm-hmm. awesomely happy. I'm right back in this happy spot, you know,
right.
where I started. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you talk to me a lot about when you are sort of present in your body, you're feeling more confident
yeah.
as well, right?
Yeah.
So being able to be more yourself in those situations.
Awesome. That's a good question.
Thanks. Now I gotta think of another question.
I think it's interesting because both of us have been, we've been together for a long time, and we have been in environments and worlds that are primarily white for most of that time. We were in the Midwest, Wisconsin, Chicago, here, Cincinnati. And part of that has been us feeling like we're representing for people what being multicultural or a multi-ethnic couple looks like, and kind of being that first window into a world for people. So being that translator and that person that can, you know, break down stereotypes that people may have is a responsibility that we take really seriously. And because of that, like, approaching those conversations with as much of an open mind as we can, and knowing that they may not always be comfortable. And sometimes we may get the like, oh, I used to have a Black friend in this town. Did you know so-and-so? Right? Like, those aren't like unusual, weird interactions for us. And being kind and open when people may ask something that is really awkward, but they don't know it's awkward, is part of that confidence, right? It's part of like being comfortable that it's not about how they're seeing us, but just that they're not understanding why that's awkward or weird.
Right.
Yeah, I think for me, another thing popped in my head, whenever you go to a gym, kettlebells are the only like thing that sits in the corner at the bottom of the rack that no one uses. It's sort of like me. I mean, maybe the stories are similar, right? I mean, maybe it's I'm the only one, right? The only African American in the class. So I'm the only person in the whole entire gym that's using a kettlebell. Everyone else is doing something else different. That's like for me, even the college that I selected, I was like, I don't want to go to University of Michigan because all my friends were high school before. I want to go somewhere different. You know, so I think, you know, I've always tried to go and like in a different path, you know, where it's unique or maybe not a lot of people travel there. Uh-huh. I think that's what I love about kettlebells. Yeah. You know, it's super dynamic, a great full body workout. And a lot of people don't realize that or they just are unfamiliar with it. And a lot of times, even when we approach each other, you know, it's like I have never interacted with any African Americans in my whole entire life. But hey, Ryan, you're a cool guy. So, I mean, you can share your stories and interact, you know, so I think there's a lot of similarities there. So.
You mentioned a little bit about opening up or having an open mind. And I'm big about if we have to have an open mind, our body needs to be open as well. Mm-hmm. What type of, I mean, we've kind of talked about it a little bit, but what type of correlations do you guys think have helped you guys stay open-minded with doing some of the body work that has helped open up some of the joints moving forward in some of those sticky conversations?
Do you want to go
first? No, you go.
This is a big one for me, actually. Yeah. So when Ryan started training with you, practice with you, I was like, absolutely not. Like, I'm not strong enough to do that. That's not something I do. And I have, like, I had a lot of preconceived notions about what I was capable of, right? Mm-hmm. And how fit I had the capability of being. Like, I've always been a little bit chubbier. I've always also, like, I used to say to my mom, who of course being an Indian mom was always telling me I need to lose weight in the most loving way possible, that like if I lose weight then I have a great personality and I'm smart, like I'm not giving anyone else a chance, right? So like that was always my shtick, right? But it was an insecurity around I didn't think I could do it. And so when Ryan encouraged me to come practice with you, because he truly felt that this practice was very different and something that I would connect to emotionally, it was breakthrough for me as I really enjoyed it. And it was a practice that like that I connected with at a body level, right? Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't something that I was doing out of obligation. It was something that like felt really comfortable and present.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it really helped me break out of that. Like, it truly was a mental trap and a mental like mm-hmm. barrier that I had.
Mm-hmm.
It was the one thing that I didn't think, this is like a little too deep, but like that I deserved, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
it was the one thing that like I, so many things came easier to me in other spaces that I was like, this is just the one thing that doesn't happen for me. Like, that's cool. And this practice really helped me see that when you find your way into a body practice, mm-hmm. like that's what breaks it open, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, maybe the running that my sister does or the biking that someone else does isn't my way in, mm-hmm. but this is my way in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
that. Thank you
yeah.
for sharing.
Gosh, you're so good.
I know, I could sit and just listen to her talk all night.
I talk.
I think you touched on a really big point that a lot of people, even myself in other areas in my life, like, I deserve that, or mm-hmm. I am capable of that, or I mm-hmm. can have that.
Mm-hmm.
So one, I just want to say thank you for sharing that, because mm-hmm. I know that's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
But how big of a breakthrough that was for you. And I didn't even know mm-hmm. it was at that level for mm-hmm. you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking of like the first day you got your first Turkish getup.
Yeah.
And what that meant for you on so many levels.
Yeah.
And
what was really meaningful and helpful for me was as we started working together, I was tight and like just physically couldn't do a lot, right, at the very beginning. And it was never a conversation of, like, you can't do that. It was always a conversation of, oh, the reason that you're having trouble with that move is this is tight, which is holding this back. So before we do anything, before we actually jump into that, we're going to just work on loosening this up, right? Like, there was so much care put into how everything works together and how it can unlock, right?
Mm-hmm.
That helped me realize that it wasn't that I couldn't do it. It's that it might take like 10 more steps for me to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that was the only way and the most nourishing way into being able to connect with my body.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It's good.
Yeah. Do I need to repeat the question for you? Oh, what was
your question? I was like, listening. I'm a short thinking.
The question was something along the lines of how has physically opening your body helped you in the mental space of opening your mind?
Yeah, let's see here. I can say this. I think lately, like, I've noticed as I've gotten older, my body wants to actually, like, get tight because I sit a lot at work, so I'm having to do more work to, like, just stretch and, like, work out, like, hip rockers, back is always, you know, work on that, loosen this up, you know, and I think it's a steady reminder for me to always, like, keep trying, right, to
yeah.
be open to doing new things, you know, don't stay at a steady point, but you have to keep moving, right, in order to, like, move forward,
mm-hmm.
right, or else you get stuck in this trap, hey, my body hurts, it's because you're not moving, right, so I think there's a lot of applications, you know, I mean, whether it's, you know, swinging kettlebells every day to just stay, to maintain mobility and flexibility, it's just, yeah, it's just, that helps it, or maybe perpetuates in a lot of different, or manifests itself in other forms in your head, so,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Cool. Going back to some of the conversations about just the color difference that we live in and how you guys have possibly felt like going your own way or you having that representation with being white, what are some advices that you have for us to be open-minded to you?
Don't stare. That may be it, actually.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we both find incredibly frustrating.
Yeah. I say it's because we're cute, but I wonder if some of it is about assumptions, right? Like, I've been having conversations with some girlfriends around living as someone that's white in a primarily dominantly white culture. There are a lot of norms that are considered norms, but maybe things that people of color have to adjust to, right? Like normative behavior around, I'm trying to think of an example even. If the assumption is, well, actually, like maybe an extreme example is when someone is, people may say about Ryan, oh, you speak so eloquently, right? Or you speak so like, well, as a Black man, like, that's awesome. Or even if they say, oh, Ryan, yeah, yeah. Oh, he's really well-spoken, right? It's intended as a huge compliment, right? But the implication is that a lot of African-American men may speak in a different dialect, and that's of a lesser value than someone that speaks in a similar tonal pattern to the white normative culture, right? Whereas it's truly a dialect difference, right? And it doesn't signify intelligence at all. But growing up in the culture that we do, the assumption is that if someone speaks in the normative dialect, that they're more intelligent and more polished and put together than someone that may speak in a different dialect. Which is maybe a more urban dialect, or however you frame that dialect up. So things like that would, and then if a conversation starts around that, there's a very natural reaction to someone that's white that's being confronted with that or being presented that as new information to get defensive, right? Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like, unless we can have those conversations openly and people are comfortable reflecting on some of the assumptions that they're making in order to jump to those conclusions, right? That's the guidance I would give. Like when you're confronted with assumptions that you may be making on what is normative, acceptable behavior, and someone of color or someone of ability, right? It's the same for someone of ability or any sort of minority status. When you're confronted with that, rather than starting to go down the path of, but I did that because, being open to the, okay, wow, I had no idea I was doing something wrong. Can you help me understand that? Like, what is it? What was the assumption that I was making that hit you in the wrong way? I think a lot of times it's the person of color or the person, whatever that minority situation is taught to, and we're used to just adjusting around that normative assumption, and to be more conscious of those normative assumptions and challenge them. Similar to a woman in a boardroom, right? Like a lot of times their voice may not be heard. And if you're a male ally, if you notice that happening, being that person that's like, hey, I think Chandra was trying to say something. What were you trying to say, right? Like giving that space to people when you notice something that may not line up with the normative way things happen in an environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
okay.
That's,
sorry, that was
no, no, that was great because I think you hit a big thing of being defensive. And
yeah.
I know mm-hmm. even just from my own personal history, like it wasn't even a race conversation. I would just always be very defensive with myself and
yeah.
just mm-hmm. very guarded with me and just the story that I've come from mm-hmm. or the story that, I have lived. So I think it goes kind of, it's a two play of just people diving in, doing that personal work, so
yeah.
understanding why they're defensive.
That's right.
to be able to be open to listen.
Yeah.
And I think that those defensive walls are guarding something that's very a deep wound, at least from my own personal experience, that hasn't had a chance to breathe, to heal.
Yeah.
And so that space that you're creating that you mentioned, it's important for the individual to have that as well, to be able to listen.
Yeah.
And the differences.
I think to build on what you're saying, like it's telling you something about yourself, right? Like that moment of guilt or that moment of like when your chest constricts and you're like, what are they trying to say about me? Like you take that moment to breathe and take a step back and say, why am I feeling this way? It helps to uncover some of that unconscious bias.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this is where, and this is where I get really excited about the breath work. Mm-hmm. I had a guest earlier who's also a strong kettlebell instructor, African-American. We dove into this concept of breathing and the breath work and how that's the connection of the yin and yang aspect of just the training aspect too. That's the one thing that really connects it. And I think there's a quote that says something about the breath is something, the breath is the one thing that connects the conscious to the unconscious.
Oh, cool.
So it's funny that you bring that up already. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why am I restricted in my breath? Because there's something there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so when you start training the breath, as you guys have mentioned already, the more you train and be aware of your breath, even just not just training, but everyday life, I think that's where we really start to unfold and bring those layers out of really deep healing. And at least I know that's for my own story. Do you guys have anything that you can relate to with the breath work that we've done with the kettlebells into everyday life or conversations or anything like that?
Ooh, I think just in interactions, like when something is maybe a little bit like intense, you know, breathe, just like step back, you know, try to take some time, try to slow down time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think even in meditation, it's just slowing down and thinking and being more aware, I think is something I think that's I learned, the tool I picked up.
Yeah. I think my mindfulness practice was happening at the same time, like sort of building at the same time as I started the kettlebell practice. And the additional layer that the kettlebell practice brought to sort of that breath was not only being able to take a breath, but then also anchoring that breath in my body, right? Like actually being able to feel my feet. Because in mindfulness, we do have body scan practices. But to me, that didn't feel as tangible until I started kettlebells, because it was focusing on the movement that really helped me like ground into my body. Mm-hmm. And so in those moments of tension, like I could feel my chest constricting, and that was always my first trigger. But then being able to take that step back by then feeling my feet and grounding in my body and not reacting was sort of the extra layer that I was able to take into daily life.
I love what you said about feeling your breath almost being anchored throughout your body.
Yeah.
I think so many of us, including myself, before I started training kettlebells, I like breathed just all through up shallow. In the shadow of my lungs. And that's one of the reasons why I have such a horrible rib injury, was just because of how I was breathing.
Oh, interesting.
So I think what you're saying about anchoring with your breath no one's put those two words together.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's huge.
And getting deeper in your body with your breath.
Yeah.
And that's something we talk about a lot in just meditation practice, is as you get deeper into your meditation practice, your breath does go from your chest to down into your belly, more grounded.
Mm-hmm. So sorry to interrupt.
No.
Do they do a lot of breath work with the mindfulness?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the practice that we do is a breath-based practice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's where it started for me. And what kettlebells helped me do was also sort of anchor in my body at the same time.
Mm-hmm. I think, I mean, for me, it was breathing, because I think you had coined a phrase, Buddha belly. Out. This way, pushing your belly out, you know, where you need to like try to expand your rib cage, kind of like going outsidewards instead of this way. I don't know. Just that actually helped me in the meditation too, like just being aware of that breath and how I was breathing.
Yeah.
You know, because before, again, it's Buddha belly all the time. And that's mm-hmm. a really wrong way to breathe. You need to breathe the other way. And so until someone like points that out to mm-hmm. you, then I mean, that's another form of awareness, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I'm breathing, but just incorrectly.
And for those who are listening, what Ryan's talking about is when you're taking your breath in, a lot of times, even when I was first learning this breath technique, I was just breathing and like sticking my stomach out, where you want to breathe in and almost breathe into your side as you pull your stomach and create almost like this cylinder of support throughout your torso. So that's what Ryan is referring to when he's talking about the Buddha belly. So you don't get too confused.
A Buddha belly.
Yes.
Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about?
Ooh.
I'm opening up the door for you.
No, we haven't seen you in a while. How are you doing?
I do. We talk about this a lot, actually, as we're in our basement doing our kettlebells.
Yeah.
How thankful we are to you in... like what I said before, in the care that you took around how you presented the practice to us and taught us to be so careful and to be so thoughtful in our bodies. Mm-hmm. I think that's a rare gift. And it's one that you brought to us. And I'm glad that you're bringing to the world through this podcast and through the rest of your practice. But I don't think we would be as devoted to this practice as we are if it wasn't you bringing us into it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So now I travel and look for gyms with kettlebells.
Yeah.
Where
are
kettlebells?
Yeah.
I found one finally I can go to. A wide array of kettlebells. I can swing from different like weights, heavy weights if I want.
Nice.
That's good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Charmans, for listening. This is the first live episode, so I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it was fun. For those who are listening, make sure you share the love with the 5 stars and comment below and share this episode with your family and friends. Other than that, we are going to be peacing out.
Hey, Starmans, thank you so much for tuning in. As many of you know, here in the United States, we honor African Americans during the month of February. So I decided that every guest that I have on the show for February be of color or African American. And my goal with this is to simply learn from them, simply listen from them, and to hear their stories of how they have built the resilience that many of us may not realize that they continue to strive for and live within today's society. So I thank you for joining me with this, and I hope you learned something about our culture and the culture of African American and their people and their strength. So thank you, and sit back and enjoy.